All right, Tavosai, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Ayin Tes. We're just going to pick up a little bit. I'm not exactly sure Rabbi Richter left off. Amarava on top of... Okay, so, we'll see. So you know what? So if it's okay, we're just going to back up just a little bit so that we can go ahead and get the case in its entirety. So today's is Ayin Tes 79. We're going to pick up... Say thank you. We're going to pick up Ayin Tes on the base 78B. And we're just going to pick up six lines up from the bottom, the Or Minhi. So again, but I'm going to go quickly, I promise. I'm not going to take you back too far. Just this way, we're dealing with the case of the bucket filled with the water of the Paraduma. So you might as well just go ahead and just look at that case again. So once you remember, again, we're in the midst of a really fascinating sugya that I know as Rabbi Richter went through with you yesterday, a number of incredibly important halacha lamaisa sugyas center on this. The dinim of bittul, of nullification, the concept ultimately, again, of chazusa, of when you have a mixture that ultimately changes appearance, what the impact of appearance is on a mixture. So with that, the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara is the kasha. If you have a bucket that is filled with saliva and you immerse it in a mikvah, ki'ilu lo tava. So the immersion for the immersion for the bucket is invalid. So we're talking about a case over here where, when I said the bucket itself, the kli, is tameh, and therefore requires immersion in a mikvah. If it's filled with saliva, so the Braisa paskins that the immersion is invalid. Why is the immersion invalid? So Rashi points out over here, kilo lo tavo, Rashi divrei maschil, right across from Tosos Dilin, sharok of vuhuchotis bifnei amayim. Saliva is thick, and apparently, again, from Chazal's perspective, the thickness of the saliva does not allow for the penetration of the water. And as such, again, therefore, it's as if the water doesn't fill up the inside of the kli. Therefore, by definition, the kli is still tummy. That's case number one. Mei raglayim, what happens if the bucket is filled with urine? So roin oso ki'ilu hin mayim. We view the urine as if it's water, and therefore, by definition, the kli is tahar, because if you ultimately, again, Abbas said, why would the kli be tahar? So this is an incredible halacha that I'm sure you Rabbi Richter, touched on yesterday. When it comes to hilchos mikvos, there is a concept called hashaka. Hashaka literally means, from the lashon of nishika, to kiss. When you have, quote-unquote, regular water that comes in contact, ultimately, again, with mikvah water, so the fact that the regular water touches or kisses the mikvah water turns the regular water into mikvah water. We'll say, our mikvahs today operate with the principle of hashaka. You don't usually have 40 we're not getting into all of hilchos mikvahs, but very often today our mikvahs operate based on this principle. That's how we have the ability to incorporate other waters other than rainwater into the mikvah, as well based on the concept of hashaka. So what the Braisa is saying over here is that if you have urine, so urine has the status of water, so therefore when the bucket of urine goes ahead and is immersed into the mikvah, maybe don't use the mikvah afterwards, so that's a different discussion, right? Then ultimately, again, the bucket itself becomes tahar, out the concept of hashaka. Look at Rashi. Ro'en oso kilu mayim, kilomar afapi shemar ein chaluk miktsas mimar. Even though the urine obviously has a different color and therefore a different image, right? It looks different than the other waters. Ultimately, again, urine is looked at still halachically as water. So ultimately, again, we view it as if it's water. Mole mechata. So also, here's the case we're going to focus on today. What happens if the bucket is filled with mechata? So also, remember again, what's mechatos? That's the spring water mixed with the ashes of the para aduma. This is the para aduma concoction, the para aduma mixture. So halacha lemaisa, let's say the bucket is filled with this. So listen to this. Ad sheyirbu hamayim al mechatos. The halacha is that the bucket, and I'm also saying, remember in all of these cases, why am I immersing the bucket? Why? The bucket is tame. Right, the bucket is tummy. That's what's happening over here. I'm immersing it in the mikvah order to retire the bucket. So again, remember, the challenging part in all of these cases is that the bucket has contents. There's stuff in the bucket. So now in case number one, it's saliva. The bucket is not tar because we say the water doesn't penetrate the saliva. Case number two, which is urine, we look at urine as water, and therefore again, the bucket is tar. Case number three, the bucket is filled with para aduma water. So we'll say, what do I do with this case? So what's the halacha? Ad sheyirbu amayim amechatos. You need to make sure that you have a majority, 51% of mikvah water inside the bucket itself, and then the bucket becomes tahar. Look at Rashi. Ad sheyirbu amayim. Ein tevila ola lekli, at sheyishpoch mehem yosem mechetziav shalkli, kedei sheyirbo amayim manichnasen amechatos. So when looking at the contents on the inside of the bucket, there must be 51% mikvah water to 49% para aduma water. If that's what you have on the inside of the bucket, then the bucket will be tar. Anything less than 51%, but it's not really 51%, you know, it's 50-point-something%, right, of mikvah water, the bucket will remain tameh. So the Gemara says, man sham islay, the islay roin. Now in general, who is the opinion who says that roin, that we subscribe to the concept of roin? So remember again, roin was the idea that whenever you have a foreign liquid mixed into a mikvah, we look at it as if what? As if it were to be red wine. And then we would determine the impact of that foreign substance based on the mikvah as if it were red wine. Who is that opinion? Look at Rashi. Man sham islay dama roin. So I'm sorry, before I look at Rashi, it's Rabbi Huda. So look at Rashi just a moment. So say, who is the opinion who says that when you have a foreign liquid, you look at it as if it's wine? So we'll say that's how you judge its impact on the mikvah. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Yet, v'katani disagi le'beruba. Yet when it comes to the waters of the Para Aduma, what do we say? We say as long as there is a majority of mikvah water to a minority of Para Aduma water, that is going to be enough. In other words, we don't say that what? We don't say that we view the waters of the Para Aduma as what Rabbi say, as wine, and figure out again how much wine could you have and still maintain the proper coloration of mikvah water. Instead, we just go ahead and we make this all about Rov. Amra Baye. Baye says it's not a kasha. Not a kasha, top of Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, Hadidei Hadrabe. In fact, we're going to see that there is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda himself, and there is the opinion that Rabbi Yehuda mentions in the name of his Rebbe, as we're going to see who is Rabban Gamliel. Take a look at the first Rashi on Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, Hadrabe, Hadisnan Lael, Rowan Oso, Ki'ilu Hu Yayin Adom, Drabehu, the Machmir Bebitel, as we're going to see, Rabbi Huda himself is actually mekel, is actually more lenient when it comes to determining the halachic status of mixtures. It is his Rebbe, Rabbi Gamliel Rabosai, who is of the opinion that when you have a foreign substance mixed into a mixture, again, we'll focus on mikvos over, because that's what we're talking about over here, that foreign substance is looked at like red wine, and therefore we determine the impact of the foreign liquid on the mixture as if it were to be red wine. That is the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel, his Rebbe. Disanya, Bosai, here's the Braisa. Disanya, Rabbi Huda, Mishra, Rabbi Huda says in the name of his Rebbe, Rabbi Gamliel, Ein dam mevatel dam. We'll say one type of blood is not mevatel another type of blood. We'll say, so again, we saw references to these cases before. We'll see this again later on. So Rashi points out over here, Eitzel Zrika of Eitzel Kisui. So one type of blood cannot be mevatel another type of blood. Ein rok mevatel rok. One type of saliva cannot be mevatel. So where does this come up? Rashi says, Hatar mevatel rok zav. Supposed to listen to this. This is, for example, the saliva of a zav. It's not just the zav. We're going to see it's of a nida also conveys tuma. If you have saliva from a tummy person that gets mixed in with saliva from a tahar person, so again, Rabbi Gamliel saying over here that one saliva is not mevatel another saliva. Rabbi say we're going to see ve'im miraglaim mevatel miraglaim. Similarly, again, if you have the urine of a tahar person that gets mixed together with the urine of a tummy person, so one urine does not go ahead and be mevatel another, which Rabbi say is another way of saying what? Min bemino eino batel. We'll say all of these are examples of that when you have two like substances that are mixed together, one cannot be mevatel the other, even if what? Even if what? Even if the permitted item has a much larger ratio to the prohibited item. This is the shita of Rabbi Gamliel of min bemino eino mevatel. Rava Amar. So Rava says it's a different interpretation. Suppose this, remember, we're trying to figure out the case of the saliva, in the bucket, I understand. The case of the urine in the bucket, I understand. The complicated case is the para aduma situation. So remember, how did the Braisa paskin? The Braisa said that if you have a bucket filled with para aduma water and you want to now immerse it in the mikvah, you can, as long as what? As long as what? You have 51% mikvah water inside the bucket to the 49% of the para aduma water. That's what. So again, we're trying to understand how exactly I understand that case. So we'll say, so first possibility is, that's not reflecting the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that's reflecting the view of Rabbi Gamliel. Rava has a different interpretation. He says, Rava Amar, Bidli Shetocho Tar, V'gabo Tami Askin. I'll say, this is really quite fascinating. So Rava says, what are we talking about over here? This is a bucket, where the inside of the bucket is Tahar, but it's the outside of the bucket that's Tame. So I will say, interestingly enough, with kelim, with utensils, you can have this kind of situation where the outside contracts Tuma, but the inside does not. So we're dealing over here with a bucket where the outside is Tame, the inside is not. I will say, if the outside is Tame and the inside is not, then how do you purify it? How do you purify it? You have to put it in a mikvah, but the main mikvah need not seep into the inside of the bucket. All I really need is the main mikvah to come onto the outside of the bucket. Now, here is the catch. The Medina, Sagiluhu Becholdun. I was saying, in reality, you do need a little bit of main mikvah to seep into the inside of the bucket. Why? Because I was saying, you want to make sure that the main mikvah gets all of the outside of the bucket, which would normally require the main mikvah just to dip over a bit over the lip of the kli, which means that you do have to immerse it enough in order that some of the main mikvah come into the kli itself. So the medina meikaradin sagi becholtuhu. All you need is a little bit of main mikvah to enter to the inside of the kli, but v'rabbanon hu degazru b'hu dilma chayis alayhu v'lo mafdil lei. So we'll say the rabbis were concerned that what? That maybe you're going to go ahead and be concerned about your para aduma water, and therefore you won't fully go ahead and immerse the kli in the mikvah. In order to ensure that you really immerse the kli in the mikvah, what did Chazal say? You need to have 51% of mikvah water on the inside of the kli as well. So this is a gzera, we'll say. So again, remember, me'ikar adin, all I need is the waters of the mikvah to touch the outside of the kli. I don't need any waters on the inside of the kli itself, but out of a concern that since I have a bucket filled with paraduma water, which is very special, very unique and very rare, so Chazal were afraid I'm not going to immerse the bucket sufficiently. So how do they ensure that you have a sufficient immersion? How do they ensure that? By telling me that even on the inside of the bucket, I have to have 51% mikvah water compared to the 49% para aduma water. So the Gemara says, v'cheivan de'ikari buya lo tzarech. And ultimately, again, as long as I have 51% mikvah water, that will ensure that what? That halacha lemaisa, the kli was properly immersed. Amar Rava. So we'll say, the Rava says as follows. Amar Rabbanan b'tayma, v'amar Rabbanan b'ruba, v'amar Rabbanan b'chazusa. So Rava says as follows. The rabbis make a statement when it comes to taste, b'tayma. The rabbis make a halachic ruling when it comes to rov majorities, and the rabbis make a halachic statement when it comes to chazusa. Chazusa, we'll say, means what? Means appearance. When do they make their different halachic statements? We'll say, here we go. Min b'she'en amino b'taima. Supposed to listen to this. When you have two mixtures, or I should say a mixture of two dissimilar items. So I will say, how do I determine the halachic nature of the item? And the answer is taste. So we'll say, what's the paradigmatic example of this? Basar b'chalav. Right? Basar b'chalav, right? Milk gets mixed into meat. So again, how do I determine if the mixture is kosher or treif? Taste. Can you taste the milk in the meat mixture? Obviously that raises a question, which is, right? So who's the Shabbos guy, right? Who's going to be the guy who's going to do it? So remember again, the Gemara Maseches Chulin says, you don't use a Jew for this. You use a Gentile. And they use a Gentile, b'kfeila. So again, they were professional tasters. And again, I'm going to say, you would use a chef. You would use someone who has a refined palate that they could taste it. Someone who could be relied upon. But now again, so today we use different, the halacha has evolved, and we use shishim, but in a pure sense, when you have a mixture of two dissimilar items, and you want to figure out the status of the item, it is determined by taste. Min bamino. But so what if you have two similar items mixed together? So remember, taste is not going to work. Why is taste not going to work? Because it tastes the same. So the most I beruba. Then ultimately again, the halachic definition of the mixture will be determined ultimately again through majority. Whichever item is the majority determines the halachic identity of the mixture. Heicha di'ika chazusa, was that when I have a mixture with two things, and one thing has an impact on what? On the appearance of the mixture. So that'd be the example of what? Of what? Of wine that falls into the mikvah. So then, bimara. Then we'll say ultimately again, the identity of the mixture will be determined ultimately again through appearance. So we'll say this is a very important statement, which in Meretz Hashem we will elaborate much upon when we get to Maseches Chulin. But I will say these are three profound statements. Min bimino, right, when you have two similar items, rov, min b'she'ino mino, two dissimilar items, taste, and ultimately again, chazusa, when there's a change in appearance, bimara. Upliga de Rabbi Elazar. So we'll say, now we're jumping back for just a moment. Remember again, Reish Lakish Rabose mentioned the case on Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. Reish Lakish said, Hapigal vahanoser vahatame, shebalalon zebaze vahachlan potter. So Reish Lakish made a dramatic statement that if you have a mixture of pigal, nosar, and tame, and you mix them all together, and you ate it, what's talacha? Your potter. Why you potter? Because also Reish Lakish essentially says that each one is mevatel the other, right? Each isser is mevatel the other. Here Rashi says over here, what Reish Lakish says, he says, "E'efsher shelo yarbe min al chavero v'yevatlenu." It's impossible that one will not go ahead and be mevatel the other. So Rashi says over here, "Kishehu lois osa b'fiv nivla min l'so chavero mi'uto shalze berubo shalze." Ubatal hamiut berov vaabatal bechomin nosef hamavatal. So I'll say ultimately again, Reish Lakish has this interesting idea where each iser is mevatal its fellow. So the Gemara goes weiter. So upliga de Rabbi Elazar, and Reish Lakish argues on Rabbi Elazar. Because what does Rabbi Elazar say? Rabbi Elazar, kishem shein mitzvos mevatlos zuazu. The same way that one mitzvah cannot be mevatal another one. Kach ein isurin mevatlin zu azu. So Rabbi say isurin are also not mevatel one the other. So the Gemara says, by the way, from where do we know? Man shamis lei do amar ein mitzvos mevatel zu azu. But say, where do we see this concept that one mitzvah cannot be mevatel another mitzvah? So listen to this, it's incredible. Hillel, but say Hillel teaches us that mitzvos are not mevatel zu azu. Where do we see this by Hillel? The Sanya, get ready. Amru alav al Hillel hazakin sheyakarchan bevas achos vaochlan mishum shenamar amatzos umerorim yochluhu. We'll say, right, what's the raya that ein mitzos mevatlo zu azu? Korech. What would Hillel do? Hillel would go ahead and eat matzah, maror, and karban pesach all together. Now the fact that he ate them all together tells me that what? That ultimately, again, the matzah doesn't negate the Karban Pesach, but more importantly, the Karban Pesach, or the matzah, is not mevatel the maror. The fact that you can eat them all together indicates to us, ein mitzvos mevatlos zu azu. Now Tosas says something very interesting. If you look at the bottom, Tosas, he says, Amar lava hello, hazek yishay karchem vasachos, bizman abayis, hayishlashtan da'oraisa, bim tomar, ומינלון דקסברה אין מיצוס מבט לא זו הזו, דלמה הילוקח הרבה מכל אחד ואחד, וכי היגבנו לא מבט לא כדי פריש ישראל. But as Tosa says, this is not necessarily a good idea, because maybe what? Maybe Hillel just piled it on. Maybe Hillel just put a lot of Karan Pesach and a lot of Mor and a lot of Matzah, and that's why ultimately, again, it does not mevat lo zu hazu. Now both say, just interestingly enough, the Gemara is quoting over here the Shita of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar disagrees with Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that Isurim Mevatlim Zuazu, one Isur can literally be Mevatl another. Rabbi Elazar says, no. The same way that Mitzos are not Mevatl Zuazu, Isurim. His Raya that Mitzos are not Mevatl Zuazu is Hillel. The fact that Hillel can eat all of this together indicates to us that one Mitzvah does not overpower the next. The same way that one mitzvah is not mevatel to the next, so too one iser is not mevatel to the next. They both say, who do we paskin like? We actually pass like Rabbi Elazar. The Rambam in Hilchos Psuli HaMokdoshin writes as follows. Ha-pigol va-noser va-tomei, she-balalon ze-ba-zeh va-achlon. If you took pigol, noser, an item that was tomei, and you mixed it together, and you ate it, you're chayiv. And even though I will say you have more of one than the other, ein mevatlo. Ultimately, again, one will not be mevatla the other. Why? She'in ha'isurin mevatlin ze'edzeh. So what's the pasuk like Rabbi Elazar against Reish Lakish? Ein isurin mevatlin ze'edzeh. One isur is not mevatla another. Therefore, if you go and you eat a mixture of a whole bunch of isurim, you will be chayef. Now, I will tell you something very interesting. It's not pasha, though, that we paskin that in mitzvos mevatlo zuazu. I will say, remember again, do we paskin like kilo when it comes to the consumption of Karban Pesach? No. We paskin against Hilo. We paskin against Hilo. We actually pass like the Chachamim that amas m'michul does not mean, remember, I will say, I want to just point out, you know, there's a Mufur Shiraya, that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, they ate soft matzahs. Right, it's a Rosalichic crisis. Before sure, what's the rye that they had soft matzah? Sometimes the Beis HaMikdash is Hillel's sandwich. What's like? You ever right? You know by the Seder when you do your Korek sandwich. Yeah. Let's say you know what happens? What happens? It's a culinary catastrophe, right? You go ahead and you take one bite, and what happens? Mamish, it's all over the place. And wonder to yourself, why would anyone in their right mind, Hillel, I respect you so much, but why in your right mind would you make a sandwich like this? The very simple answer is because he didn't make a sandwich. Like they said, they had soft matzahs, right? So essentially, you know what Hillel was eating on the night of the Seder? A shawarma, right? He had a lafa. He had some lamb, Karban Pesach. They used lettuce for maror, and he rolled it all together. Amatzas umrom yochlu. Korech, Rabbi Yosef, means karchan biyachad. They wrapped it all together. Now, happens to be, we don't paskin like Hillel. We happen to do the korech sandwich at the Seder, Zecher, as a remembrance to what Hillel did, but we actually don't go ahead and pass it like Hillel. Why don't we pass it like Hillel, Rav Osai? So the Vilna Gaon, the Gros says, because the Chachamim felt that Tamim are mevatlim zuazu, that the taste are mevatlim one another. If you eat, we know this, if you eat Pesach, Matzah, and Rav Osai, what happens? Most importantly, what occurs is you blunt the taste of what? Of maror. Maror is really what is blunted the most in this whole mixture, especially if you're using lettuce. Maror is blunted the most. The Chachamim say the taste of maror has to be tasted by itself. So the Gaon says, you're right, we don't paskin mezos mevatlo zuazu, that's not the issue over here, but tamim mevatlo zuazu. This is just a culinary issue. One taste absolutely is mevatl, the next taste. Therefore, again, so I just want to point out, we paskin Ein isur, so we paskin that ein isur mevatel zuazu, just like mitzvos not mevatel zuazu. But nevertheless, despite that, we still don't paskin like Hillel. We will not. We don't eat. I don't know what's going to happen in the Beis HaMikdash, but at least for now, we don't eat everything together. Me'ikir hadin out of the consumptive. Vilna Gaon says that one taste will eclipse the next, and at the night of the Seder, it's important to taste each of the meaning individually. Now, you could still hold in mitzvos mevatlo zuazu. When it comes to Pesach Seder, it's not really a din of mitzvos mevatlo zuazu. It's really a din of what? It's really a din of tam mevatlo zuazu. Good. I ain't testing with this. Tam rabbanon. Charson shel zov. What's another interesting case? Charson shel zov vizavam. Well, listen to this. Now, the charson shel zov, Rashi points out over here, is avit shomei raglayim, Benishra, suppose like this seems to be like a bedpan. If you have a bedpan that was made out of earthenware, so what happens? You have the bedpan that was used by a zav or a zava. So they were urinating into the bedpan. Now, obviously, what happens over here with the bedpan is, especially if it's earthenware, it absorbs the urine. Now, what happens? The bedpan breaks apart, right? And you have a piece of earthenware. So the Gemara says over here that earthenware is considered to have absorbed the urine of the Zav. And if one goes ahead and moves that piece of earthenware, they're Tameh. Because it will say anything that has contracted Tumah from a Zav will transmit Tumah also through Hesed, through moving. So if you have the piece of the earthenware piece of the bedpan of the Zav, which absorbed Zav urine, you will be Tameh if you move that earthenware shard. So the Gemara says over here as follows. Pamishon v'sheni tamei. Rabbos say, now, interesting enough, if you did the following. What happens if you washed the shard? So if you washed it with water one time, you washed it with water two times, it's still tamei. Shlishi tar. But if you washed it three times, right, the third time you wash it with water, ultimately, again, the shard becomes tar. So what's that? Apparently, the repeated washing with water seems to have extracted the urine from the shard, and ultimately, now it will be tar. Look at Rashi for just a moment. So Rashi says, Gimel tar, Mishanasa nesocha maim shlosha pamim, tar, shepolto meharaglaim hanivloin bo. So you go in and you wash it the third time, so the third time already has the ability to extract the urine, which is absorbed into the shard. When is that true? Bosa, that's only if you wash the shard with water. So Bosa, what happens if you didn't use water? Rather, what did you use? What did you use? Urine. Or Bosa, let's say a person goes ahead and takes the shard, and what do they do? They urinate onto the shard. So now, Bosa, but the person who's urinating now is what? Is a tahar. So the shaila now is, does quote-unquote tahar urine ultimately work in the same way to remove the tummy urine of the zav? So the Gemara now says over here, no, it only works with water, will not work with urine. Afilu asiri tummy. Even if somebody tar urinated on that shard 10 times, so the tar urine will not remove the tummy urine ultimately of the zav. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov Omer, Shlish, so we'll say, by the way, I want to point out, you say to yourself, really? Like, it's enough that I don't have coffee, right? But now I'm learning about your multiple urinations on a shard. But you have to understand something. We live in such a disposable society. But understand, again, if you had a bedpan, ultimately, like, remember, shard doesn't just mean a shard. Shard means a smaller utensil, still usable as a bedpan. So ultimately, again, what's happening over here is we want to figure out, can it be recycled? Can it be reusable or not? So the Gemara says over here is as follows. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Shlishi afa pish lanasam socho mayim tar. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov disagrees. And he says, in fact, the bedpan of the Zav can be purified, but say even without water, if it was urinated on three times by a Tahar. So Tahar urine will also work to extract the tummy urine, which was absorbed ultimately inside that bedpan. So man shamis lay da'amar min b'mina lo batal. So remember again, according to the first approach, so according to Tanakama, the only thing which can purify the Zav's bedpan is what? Is water. So even if you were to have a tahar urinate on that bedpan multiple times, it still would not go ahead and purify the bedpan. They're both saying, what does that tell me? That tells me min bemino eno bottle. That ultimately, again, two like items, two similar items, one cannot be mevatel the other. So therefore, again, tahar urine cannot be mevatel tame urine. Who is that opinion? Rabbi Huda. So we'll say, man shall say dar min bemino. So we'll say, whose opinion is the Tanakhama reflecting? It must be Rabbi Yehuda, or Minhu. So the Gemara goes and raises a kasha, Pishtan, Shetavaso Nida. So listen to this interesting case. So let's say you have flax, which was spun by a Nida. So we'll say, now everyone knows that in order to spin flax, what has to happen? You have to moisten it. So if you're spinning flax, how are you usually moistening the threads? With your saliva. So we'll say, watch this. Now, the saliva of a Nida has the status of a saliva of a Zav, which means that it's Tameh. Now we'll say, now what happens? So therefore, if a Nida is going in and spinning flax, the issue is that flax was moistened with her saliva, which means the flax has the ability to be tummy. Therefore, masito tahar. Now we'll say, if somebody moves that flax, ultimately, again, if somebody moves that flax, it will be tar. Now we'll say, now why? Because we assume that what happens to the saliva? It dries. Once saliva dries, it no longer is conveyed tuma through contact or through moving. So if the Nida spins the flax with her saliva, but then her saliva dries in the flax, if somebody else touches or moves the flax, they're tar. Vim hayalach, but if the saliva was still moist, then masito tame, ultimately again, if someone moves the flax, ultimately again, they will be tame. Why? Mishum mashkepia. Ultimately again, because of the saliva in her mouth. So we'll say, so that's the halacha. Rabbi Huda Omer, Af harotvo b'mayim tamei mishum mashkepia. So we'll say, ultimately again, listen to this. Even one who goes ahead and subsequently moistens the flax with water will still become tamei because ultimately, again, based on mashkepia, because of the saliva of her mouth, va'afilo tuva. So we'll say, this is a follow-up case. Rabbi Huda says, Rabbi Osai, that if you subsequently moisten the flax, even with water, if you go ahead and now you touch it or you move it, you'll become tamei. Why? because of the saliva of her mouth. Vafila tuva, even if there is a lot of water. Look at Rashi. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af harotu amayim tamei mishum mashkepia. B'toseftu maseches taros, af hamalach lecho b'mayim la'achar shiyav. Eishabos, listen to this. Rabbi Yehuda is adding something else. Even if the flax dried, you subsequently re-moisten it with water. What's going to be the halacha? Chazer harok lihios lach, machmas hamayim v'tamei mishum mashkepia. Ultimately, again, so what does it do? I will say, it almost sounds like it what?
Yeah.
It reactivates the saliva. So I say, so what's the pshat? How could that be? We just said before that once the saliva, so must remember again, we have three cases. Case number one, right, is the Nida is spinning the flax, she moistens it with her saliva. Case number one, the saliva dries. What's the status of someone who touches the flax? Tar. Case number two, the saliva is moist. What's the halacha? Tame. Case number three, the saliva dries, but ultimately, again, somebody re-moistens the flax with water. What does Rabbi Huda say? If you touch the flax, you're what? Your tame. But what's the pshat? I don't understand. Once your saliva dried, it dried. Why should reintroducing water reactivate the saliva? To which the Gemara says, Amar Papa, shiny rope. So we'll say, now the chiddush over here, by the way, is not only does it reactivate the saliva, but even what? Even if you introduced a lot of water, to the point that there's much more water than saliva. Still, if you go ahead and what? If you touch the flax, you're going to become tamei. Amar Papa, shiny roke, the courier. Saliva is different, they will say. Why is saliva different? Rashi says, the courier, nichnas bepishtan bechazaka, the kasha lotes. But say the difference over here is that saliva gets firmly embedded in the stalks themselves. And ultimately, again, it's never fully extracted. Therefore, when the water is there, it reactivates it and never fully extracts it. But I will say, ultimately again, but urine is different. And that's why, again, halacha l'maaseh, so urine can go ahead and what? Urine can be extracted. Urine can be extracted ultimately again with three times. And Abosai, the way that Raman Paskins is, the urine of the Zav can be extracted even with three subsequent urinations of a Tahar person. Even Min Bamino ultimately again will extract the urine of the Zav, ultimately make the item Tahar, but ultimately saliva becomes firmly embedded. So the Gemara goes weiter. Nisare pedama psulin yishpach la'ama. So Abosai, so the Gemara, what was the question?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any difference. That's not the Gemara doesn't seem to feel that's really the groove over here. Yeah, doesn't seem to make a distinction. So we'll say the Gemara goes by there. So we'll say, so again, so the way the Gemara is coming out over here is that when it comes to the cheres of the Zav, so once it absorbs the urine of the Zav, the urine of the Zav can be cleansed or be purged from the utensil with three subsequent cleanings. Whether that's a cleaning of water or a cleaning of tar urine, it will work. When it comes to ultimately, again, the flax that absorbs the saliva of the Nida, if it's dry, it doesn't convey Tumah. If it's moist, it does convey Tumah. And apparently the saliva can be reactivated even through the introduction of water. The Gemara goes later. So we'll say now the Gemara makes mention to the last machlokis in the Mishnah. So the last machlokis in the Mishnah, we'll say, was as follows. That ultimately, again, the Gemara says that if you have blood that is mixed in, blood that gets mixed together. So the Mishnah's case was dama tamtzis. So if you get what we call sacrificial blood, which was dama nefesh, with dama tamtzis. Rabbi said dama tamtzis was the rest of the blood which trickled out of the animal. So the Tanakhama said yishpach la'amo, you pour down the drain of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Eliezer says it was kosher. It was kosher. So Rabbi says, so says the Gemara as follows. The Ma'akim, what are they arguing about? Amar Rav Zvid. What they're arguing about, Rabbi Osei, is are we gozer gzeros? Do we make preventative decrees in the Beis HaMikdash or not? The Mar Sever gozerin, Umar Sever lo gozerin. One opinion says we are gozer, one opinion says we're not gozer. Rabbi Osei, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Begozerin gzer b'mikdash pligi, im osin siyag b'kodshim, laharchik min ha'avera, v'lo chayshinan lahafsid kodshim, shelo yafsid es elu b'shvil siyag de'achirim kamifligi. So we'll say ultimately again, the machlokis over here is as follows. Do we make protective gzeros? Yeah, protective. Right. Do we make protective gzeros by kachim in order to distance people from making mistakes? Even though what those gzeros will lead to a wasting of kachim. So we're going to see how this comes up in just a moment. So the Gemara says, so Tanakama says yes. And therefore, what they're both saying, if you have a case of kosher blood, kosher sacrificial blood, that gets mixed together with what? With tame, with non-kosher sacrificial blood. Even though what? There's a lot more sacrificial blood than non-sacrificial blood, the Tanakama still says what? Pour it all out. Why, Rabosai? Because what are we concerned about? We're concerned about a case where there is more tame blood than kosher blood that you may come to use it as well. So in order to prevent us from potentially using non-kosher blood for sacrificial purposes, we will tell you to pour out any mixture of blood, even though what Rabosai, you hear an incredible chiddush. So we'll tell you to pour out any time that non-kosher blood, when I say non-kosher, I mean not fit for sacrificial use, gets mixed together with sacrificial blood, pour out the whole thing. Even though there might be a rove of sacrificial blood, because we're concerned that what? If we allow you to use this mixture, you may come to what? Use a different mixture, where ultimately, again, there's more non-kosher blood. So, however, Umar Sabalokazinan, Rabbi Elazar says, no, we're not going like that. If there is a majority of sacrificially fit blood, then what? Then what? We're going to tell you to use that. Rabbi Papa says, no. The Kuli Amma goes, when everybody agrees that we make gezeiros in order to safeguard the sanctity of sacrificial service in the Beis HaMikdash. So what's the machloko, Sabi Rabosai? V'hacha, b'damatam tzis matzoi l'rabos adama nefesh k'mithligi. Rabosai, here there's like a metzias tika machlokes. What's the machlokes? Is it common to have more dam tamtzis than dam ha-nefesh? Is that common or not? So, remember again, dam tamtzis is the blood that, dam ha-nefesh is the blood that spurts out after shechita. But not just the initial blood, that flows for a little bit of time. So the shaila is it common to have more dam tamtzis than dam ha-nefesh? So the Gemara says, mar sav shchiach. So one opinion, i.e., the Tanakhama says, yes, it's shchiach, therefore you pour out the mixture. Umar sav lo shchiach. And the other opinion of Loza says, no, it's not shchiach. To which the Gemara says, "Bishlam l'rapa behind the diktani yisari b'dam apsulin yishabech la'ama." Obedam atam says yishabech la'ama. So we'll say, according to Rapapa's understanding, I understand why it says that. What? Why? Ultimately, again, it says if the blood got mixed together with dam psulin, you pour it out, or if it gets mixed together with dam atam says el rav zvid la'arvinu v'lesninu. But I'm also according to Rav Zvid's interpretation, why not go ahead and group both cases and mention them together? To which the Gemara says, "Inachinami." That is a good point, Kasha. So we'll say, just you should know, the way we paskin ultimately again in the Mishnah, the way we paskin in the Mishnah is ultimately again like the Tanakhama, which I will say is pretty much the way paskin in all of these cases, that whenever there is a mixture of anything that is sacrificial, whenever anything sacrificially invalid gets mixed in with something else, we get rid of it. We don't use it. That's the way we've seen already. This is the theme over the last number of Mishnayos. We don't rely on Rov. Whenever something invalid gets mixed in, we simply pour it down the drain of the Mizbeach. We'll say, we'll just do the Mishnah and then we'll stop for today. We'll do at least part of the Mishnah. Mishnah. Dam tnimim, bedam ba'ali mumin. So we'll say, listen to this. You have the following case. Let's say you have dam tnimim, we'll say, which means you have blood of a tamim animal, meaning a kosher animal, that gets mixed together with the blood of ba'ali mumin animals. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Yishpach la'ama. We pour the blood down the drain of the Beis HaMikdash. Good. Kos b'koso. So we'll say, this is an interesting case. What happens if one cup of sacrificial blood gets mixed together with another cup of blood, one of them being pasul, one of them being kosher, or I should say, some of them being pasul, some of them being kosher. What do we do in that case? Rabbi Eliezer Omer and Karav Kos Echad Yikrivu Kala Kosos. So Rabbi Eliezer says, if one of the cups was already part of the Mizbeach, then you could go and offer up the rest. But I say, this is Rabbi Eliezer Lishitaso, because what does he hold? Once one of them was offered, you could assume that what? You could assume that what? That it was the apostle one that was already offered, therefore the rest are kosher. The Chachamim say, no, even if all of them were offered but one, you still can't offer up that last one, you pour it down the drain of the Mizbeach. Or should have the Beis HaMikdash. Hanitana l'matar, we'll say another interesting case. What happens if you have different kinds of blood which got mixed together? Some blood, Rabbi, so it was a type of blood which are placed below the sikra. For example, chatas blood. You have chatas blood, which is normally applied below the red line, that got mixed together, shenis arbu b'nisan l'mala, that got mixed in with what kind of blood? Rabbah say, for example, ola blood. Ola blood, which is applied above the red line. So Rabbah say, now I don't know which blood is which, what do I do? Rabbi Eliezer omer yitin l'mala. Rabbi Eliezer says, just place the blood above the red line. V'ra ani esa tachtonim l'mala, ki lehin mayim. V'chozer v'yitin l'mata. So we'll say, Rabbi Lez has a very interesting sheet. What does he say? Do some of the blood applications above the red line. What about the fact that some of them are supposed to be below the red line? It's okay. What essentially I say is, everything that's supposed to be above the red line should be above the red line. Anything that doesn't belong above the red line, I should consider it like what? Like water. Like irrelevant. And then I repeat the same process for below the red line. So I split the blood in half, essentially. Put some of it above, some of it below. Whatever belongs above should be above. Whatever doesn't belong above is like water. Whatever belongs below is below. And whatever doesn't belong below is like water. The Chachamim say, come on, cut it out. Yishapech la'ama. Pour it out. I will say, this is the Chachamim l'shitasam. Anytime you have a mixture and you're not sure what is what, pour it out. V'imlo nimlach v'nasin. I will say, but this in general is an interesting idea. If the coin didn't ask the shayla, but instead he just did the blood applications, v'nasin, kosher. Ultimately, again, it will be kosher. Rashi says over here, v'imlav nimlach v'nasin kosher, ha'elyon duhunitan mimeno lemalim. All right, well, so we'll stop over here. We'll pick up Emirat Hashem at the top, at the beginning of the continuation of the Mishnah, Emirat Hashem tomorrow. Shkoyach.
What you put on the top will eventually get to the bottom.
Oh, so that, we never
say that. I never. I, I